Sam Nation Talk Radio 790 KBC. Welcome to the program, folks. Good to be here. Good to be here. Before we get to the serious news, this particular news story here just kills me. Man kicked out of all-you-can-eat buffet after eating more than 50 pounds of food. Well, he's suing, right? He's suing. Maybe he's hired Sweet James Bergener, filed this big lawsuit. Now, when I say, okay, who can eat 50 pounds of food? Well, let's go through the story here. So this guy lives on welfare. He's 51. I don't have his exact dimensions. Although, folks, and we will post this up on the site, samnation.com, he looks enormous. In fact, he's wearing an orange T-shirt. He looks like the Great Pumpkin. So he apparently goes to a Golden Corral. Robbie, have you ever eaten at a Golden Corral? Yeah, you have. I thought you were more of a Cracker Barrel kind of guy. But that's true. They both love veterans. Well, this man is a buffet veteran, I'll tell you that. So apparently he spends 7 hours on site in the... all you can eat, I've always thought there was a time limit to it. Like it was per meal, you know, all you can eat. But if you start at lunch and just move your... Just stay in the restaurant until dinner time. So apparently the manager's being really patient with this guy and says, you know, enough is enough. I'm not going to charge you, but you really do have to leave now. And the guy gets furious. There apparently was a brief altercation before he was finally pushed out of the restaurant, which I can only tell you, I hope they've got some double doors. This guy, Robbie, you've seen this picture, yeah? This guy doesn't even fit into my stack of stuff. So, folks, I don't know, is there an etiquette to the all-you-can-eat thing? I'm not a buffet guy. For me, it's quality over quantity. But I know there's something really attractive to the buffet, right? And it's part of the Vegas experience. Speaking of Vegas, wow! All right, look, Nevada, let's get into politics here. I'm going to break it down for you folks. Nevada happened. It is what it is. All right. For anyone here that has any doubts that Trump is going to be the candidate for the Republican Party, let's have a little talk right now. Okay. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And there's some very basic reasons for it. So let's rewind. I only get to talk to you guys here for 1 hour a week. It's not enough. And that means that right after the show, we had the blowout result in South Carolina. So we got off air and pretty much within a couple hours, Robbie, Jeb Bush came in fourth place. Oh, he's out of the race. He's out of the race. Yeah, I thought it'd have some staying power. You know that trick where you put the avocado pit in the guacamole that's in your... I'm getting it confused now. The guacamole goes in the guacamole. So it's over. No more Jeb Bush guacamoles. He's not going to be there for Trump to kick around in these debates anymore. Well, Robbie, you remember the guacamole. Of all the things that a candidate could possibly sell, Jeb was selling a guacamole bowl, but it was like a mortar and pestle, and it was, I think, like $80. And of course, it's this shameless pandering, reminding everybody that he was playing who's the bigger Latino heartthrob, me or Marco Rubio. I mean, nothing says you're a legit Latino like selling to white people $70 bowls of guacamole or guacamole, whatever it is. Okay. So Bush is out. the field has narrowed, right? And every pundit I have heard from, every single person I've heard from about this is like, thank goodness, the field is narrowing. And there is going to these votes, you know, all 3.5 people that were voting for Jeb, these votes are, they're now going to start coalescing behind a viable Trump alternative. A guy, because they're all men on the Republican side, guy who's going to be what? He's going to beat Trump and then beat whoever the Democratic candidate is. And folks, let me explain to you why this is at best wishful thinking. And at worst, these guys who are coming up with this, okay, these pundits, I want to know what they're smoking because I want some. Trump has staying power because his followers, now this is really important, his followers are among the most loyal any candidate has had so far to date. And it's funny, it's true, and many of you out there might sympathize with this. They do these exit polls, right? So there's an election, and they come out of the polling place, and the reporters will ask, or, you know, the pollsters will ask people how they voted and when they made up their mind and that kind of thing. And the one thing that's crazy is that people really do make their minds up about a candidate on the way to the polling station, right? They're on their way to vote, and that is when they're making up their minds. And Trump leads among people who have decided a week, 2 weeks, and more than 2 months. So this is really important. A week and 2 weeks and more than 2 months. And the other candidates are picking up a far broader kind of smattering of people. And why is this important? So, okay, the guy who's making his decision on his way to vote is not the guy that's going to be there for his candidate. As the political landscape changes, he's not necessarily rooted in, that voter is not necessarily rooted in some deep kind of ideological persuasion. It's like, he's not. And that voter is not guaranteed to automatically go to the next candidate that is most like his guy, especially when there is no guy that's next closest to his guy. I'll give you a point. Who's next closest to Bush? Where do his candidates go? If Carson drops out, where do his candidates go? I mean, what can you say? There's an interesting thing there. We haven't voted in California yet. There probably were people here in California who were going to go for Jeb Bush. Again, 5 or 6 people. All right. But there's no guarantee that they're all going to coalesce behind one candidate, especially when there's a large number of those voters that are always changing their minds. They're not as firmly committed. That's one thing. So, and here's the other thing. There has never been a candidate in the Republican primary, certainly not someone capable in a general election on the Republican side, to get such a broad coalition of support. Trump is winning among men. He is winning among women. It doesn't matter how many times people smear him, you know, and try to peg him as a misogynistic woman hater. He's come out of it getting support among women. You know, Robbie, this is crazy. And you know this, but when Trump early on got himself into all sorts of hot water with that statement about Mexican immigration, and it was specifically about Mexican immigration, because he said, and here was the quote, when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're sending people that have lots of problems. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. Close quote. Now, all hell broke loose, right, Rob? Folks, if you could see Robbie, he's nodding. Yes, all hell broke loose. Did you know, Robbie, that 28% of Latinos actually support Trump's statement? 28% of Latinos. Romney, in the last election, won only 27% of the Latino vote. I mean, And folks, can I remind you, Romney came within a whisker of what, I mean, he could have won that. There was a path to victory in each state. He lost a lot of states, but he was close in a number of key states that could have put him over the top. Now, again, another very popular thing. Trump, he's a racist, right? He's this racist guy. You know, he's a hate-filled hate monger. That's what you hear. 24% of African Americans agreed with that statement on immigration. And Romney won that demographic with only 6% of that vote. And this is just, I'm telling you, this is just people that are agreeing with what is being called his most egregious and hate-filled statement, right? This is probably, you know, if you're in Bernie Sanders land, this might be one of the most toxic things that Trump has said. So the thing is it's resonating with people. So one, he's got dedicated support. Two, his message is resonating, and it's resonating with groups that aren't traditionally Republican, aren't guaranteed in no way to be Republican, but are key voting blocks in both the primary and the general election. So I'm going to break it down a little bit further for you folks. I'm telling you that I know if you're one of those that's ready to move, if Trump's going to become president, start planning on it. Yeah. I don't know. Where to? Not Mexico. And not Guatemala either. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to tell you why. After this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC. Well, she was an American girl, raised on promises. She couldn't help thinking that there was a little more life somewhere else. Well, the idea here is if you slap a giant 25% tax on a Slurpee, you know, fewer people are going to buy the Slurpee. Wrong! People like their Slurpees! Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Talk Radio, 790 KBC. Folks, I was talking about in the last segment all the minorities that the left pretends are not supporting Donald Trump. There's a breaking poll this week. 40% of blacks line up behind Trump, 45% of Hispanics. So there you go. Not only does nearly a quarter of blacks and over a quarter of Hispanics support that whole line about Mexican immigration, but 40% and 45% of those groups respectively support the candidate himself. This is why every left-wing pundit wants to do everything they can to see Trump not make it through the primary. There has never been a more feared Republican candidate on the right. Not in my lifetime. What else? What else can I tell you, folks? Well, Guatemala, do they have guacamole down there? They do, but they don't have $70, $80 guacabolis, do they? Those are probably on sale now, Robbie, right? JebBush.com. That's right. Good reminder. Do you guys know this? How Jeb had his website and somebody let it lapse? So he didn't renew his website and Trump people went in and bought it. So when you go to JebBush.com, it reroutes to Donald Trump for president. You know, it seems, at least, look, I'm just a lawyer and a part-time radio host, so don't listen to me. But it seems that if you can't renew a freaking website or can't find quality people that can do that kind of thing for you, then maybe you shouldn't run the United States of America. Okay. Anyway, true story. So immigration, right? Immigration is Trump's number one issue. And guess what? It's politically smart because a lot of people have had it up to here. A lot of reasonable people on the left, on the right. And here, and you know, we're getting a lot of, well, my favorite thing. I love, Robbie, you know this. I love when you hear another country sounding off about how we ought to be more inclusive toward immigrants. My favorite thing is when a Mexican president stands up and says, yeah, America, you really ought to be more inclusive and let more people in and not be so racist to our people that are up there illegally. And chime in, try to chime in on the policy, on our immigration policy. I get that the Pope did it, you know, even though we all know the Pope is a socialist. The Pope is the Vatican right now has their own Bernie Sanders. There's a good chance in a couple of years, if you want a piece of the Sistine Chapel, the Pope might be giving away little to-go bags. Only if you're poor, you know, only if you're deserving. So, you know, the whole hullabaloo of the Pope. Basically, I think the Pope gave Donald Trump four extra points in South Carolina. But here's the thing, folks. Every time you hear a Mexican president or a Mexican politician talk about how we need to be nicer to illegal immigrants from Mexico and their country, in our country, right? Realize this. One, it's political grandstanding. The Mexican president has a constituency, and the constituency wants to hear him say that, and that's what it is. But here's who you would not want to be. You would not want to be a Central or South American migrant trying to cross Mexico's southern border. The things that they do to people down there is almost unspeakable. The path, and it's interesting, they've done a big to-do about it, because of course everyone's having a cow that Trump is talking about building a wall, and heaven forbid not letting people just willy-nilly cross the border from Mexico into the U.S. But apparently that is exactly what Mexico is doing in the South. And they are, and it's, you know, and the lament of these articles, you read these articles, Rob, and it's just, oh, it's a humanitarian crisis, and people are being driven underground, and this and that. And I'm reading it, I'm going, well, doesn't Mexico have a right to enforce its own sovereignty and its own borders? I don't fault Mexico for it. But where was the Pope? I want to hear, well, yeah, he was busy. He was busy giving Fidel Castro bear hugs. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome to... Anyway, I'm just going to end up talking in circles. Keep coming back to this. So, immigration, right? You've got... Mexico does the same thing that Trump is telling us, and I think that a lot of voters hear this and understand it. They're enforcing they're protecting their borders because they realize they've got a problem. And it's not just a cartel problem with drugs getting over that border. But it's a huge influx of immigrants who cross across into and through Mexico. They want to put a stop to it. So why else is Trump this unstoppable juggernaut, in my opinion? Well, I think, and I'll tell you this, I think that when we talk about Republican support for the other candidates, it's not an automatic given that once the other candidates or the weaker candidates drop off, that some of their support, at least proportionally, isn't going to go to Trump. In other words, it's pretty clear that once someone like Kasich drops out, or if Rubio drops out, or whatever the case is, the assumption that all those people are just going to go someplace else, someplace completely, you know, not to Trump, there's some of their people will go to Trump. They will. And so, yeah, I read this article, Rob, you know this, about how Trump has a ceiling. He has a ceiling of support. And that there's no way he's going to cross this 35% support level. And that, again, that would be possible if it assumes that every time another candidate drops out, none of his supporters go to Trump, which, of course, isn't the case. It's not going to happen. It doesn't work that way. And we saw it in Nevada, and we saw it in South Carolina, and we saw it in New Hampshire, that Trump picked up support from candidates that had dropped off along the way. I don't know. Well, here's where it's headed. The game has not even begun. It hasn't even begun. We're only 200 delegates in right now, give or take, with Trump significantly in the lead. We got Texas, we got Arkansas, and we got Alabama. And Trump is ahead in all but Texas. And what else? Well, he's got, and in Texas, you know, Cruz has got a home state advantage. He does. And he's got, but it's tightening there too. It's tightening. Robbie, what's the count right now? It's about 4%? 4% difference or 5% difference between the two of them? And Alabama and Arkansas, both have that together. That's about 90 delegates right there. So, I don't know. I think, in my opinion, Super Tuesday is really the bloodbath when it all is going to get wrapped up. And that's the thing. The Republicans don't want this to drag on forever. And we're going to start to go into winner take all states. And so it doesn't matter if one candidate got 34% of the vote and the runner up got 33%. The 34% winner takes all the delegates and will cruise into the convention with the magic number, which is some 1,200 odd delegates to win. Well, the kid vote. Robbie, do you have that? Play that sound. What do we have? So I'll set this up. This is great. So apparently this mom has a daughter, and she is, the daughter's sitting in the car, and her mom has some really good news for her. And it's all on video, and here it is.
Ava, I gotta tell you something. Guess what we're gonna do Monday?
What are we gonna do?
We're going to see Donald Trump in person in New Hampshire.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Are you excited?
Yes!
You get to go see him in person.
And oh, folks, here we...
TV.
Yeah, she literally starts crying.
Oh. Are you excited?
Yes!
She's crying.
Do you want to meet him?
In the video, she's literally crying.
Do you want to meet him?
I love you, Trump!
Say, can I meet you, Mr. Trump?
I love
you. Ava is excited.
Yeah, I'll say. And the girl goes on and I'll tell you what. There's something about a candidate that gets everybody excited. Yeah, I'll touch on it briefly. Bernie got Dick Van Dyke endorsement this week, didn't he? So I guess he's, it's at the other end of the spectrum. It was barely intelligible. But anyway, folks, after this, after the break, we have a special guest in the studio. A special guest. Well, we don't do this very often. But we're going to talk booze. That's right. Booze. Because you know what? With all this politics in the air, we need to get a buzz on. Let's do this. Back after this, Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC. We live in a crazy world, right? We live in a crazy world. We have blind barbers. We're paying people to do nothing. And we have kids who don't know what work is. And we're surprised. We're scratching our heads when they go off to college and then, like, don't know what to do. And welcome to the program, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. And before I introduce to you our special guest today, assuming you've just voted, you voted for Bernie Sanders. There it is. You did it. You cast your vote. You're leaving the polling station and some guy with a Donald Trump sticker on the back of his lifted, you know, F-350 super diesel truck rear ends you. And what do? There's only one thing you do, and that is you call Sweet James Bergner, the only attorney you'll ever need. He's a good guy. He'll listen to you. He'll work with you, and he'll protect you and your rights when dealing with the other side, and especially when dealing with their insurance company. No, don't answer their questions. Don't get into it with them. Don't be a nice guy. Just take it from me. The other side is not there for you. They're not there to help you. Insurance companies want to do one thing and one thing only, and that is make money. And they don't make money when they pay you what you deserve. There's only one person that can help you get that, and that's Sweet James Bergner. Call him at 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. Okay. Now, if you're like me, you're wondering, you know, you're going out to eat, you're going to restaurants, you're seeing, going to bars even, and there's something different about alcohol these days. It used to be, you went to a bar and there were like seven bottles behind the bar. And now, well, you know, if you go with Robbie and he takes you on a bearded hipster tour of the seedy underbelly of Orange County, wherever it is he hangs out, West Hollywood, I don't know. If you were to follow Robbie around town, here's what you'd find out. His bars, they're like 100 bottles behind, you know, behind the bartender. And they're all shiny and they all look cool and they've all look different. Some of them look very expensive. And you'll find a hip bartender stand, you know, he's got a cool beard, right, Robbie? Is that part of the thing, a cool beard? Sleeve tattoos. And they're doing the shaking thing with that, the shaker, whatever that thing is. It's not a baby rattle. Well, anyway. It's all this cool stuff, and they're making these magical drinks, and you put your lips to it, and you have no idea what kind of alcohol is even in it. And it costs like $25 a glass. Well, my guest here is shaking her head. No, she does not have a beard, but she does know Sweet James. In fact, I think Sweet James was in one of your classes, was he not?
Pretty much every month.
Every month. Wow. Celebrity sightings. So, Gabby, what is it that you do?
I've been bartending for many years, about 12, but I wasn't always into craft. I was much more into speed, efficiency, and slinging drinks.
Well, when you say craft, is that an industry term?
Yeah, it's slang for we care more about what we're putting into our beverages, and we pay attention to every single ingredient that goes into it.
All right, so do I find that, like, let's say I go to TGI Fridays.
No.
No, not craft.
No.
Okay.
A good indicator is, are they squeezing their own juice? If they're not, if they're using sweet and sour mix, we're talking not craft.
So is that like for like a whiskey sour?
Yeah. So a whiskey sour, if you get a guy who fills up a cup, most likely dipping the glass into the ice well and then pouring some whiskey on top and then just dumping this like fluorescent green liquid on top of that and calls that a whiskey sour, that's just like your average corner dive, which there's nothing wrong for that. But I would go there and drink a beer and a shot and enjoy the salty bartender. If I wanted a craft cocktail, I go and I wait for somebody who's going to hand squeeze lemon juice that day.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to balance it with a little bit of sugar, perhaps an egg white, and a good well whiskey.
Wow. Okay, now, so I don't know if now, folks, this is radio, so I can, I have to engage in a little bit of theater of the mind. Robbie, you'll approve of what I have over here on the shelf. I know you helped me set it up. So, I've got a few I've got some whiskeys there in the front row. And one of them I actually bought in your shop, Gabby. Would you say that's the best one that I've got in that little lineup there, that Russell's?
I'd say so.
Okay. So what makes, so beyond just the cocktails, right? There's been an explosion in interest in craft whiskeys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these small batch producers. Because it used to be that, what was the go-to, what I don't know, what is the most popular whiskey out there? Is it Jack? What's the most popular whiskey?
The most widely sold is probably something like Jack Daniels.
Which I have here.
And
I have a bottle.
Wrong with Jack Daniels. It's Tennessee whiskey. It's filtered through charcoal. It's got like its own particular style.
Do you like it?
It's a decent whiskey. It's not in any of my bars. It's not a good whiskey, but because if I have it, it's harder to persuade somebody who perhaps only goes to Jack to try something different.
Got it. And so, is that part of what you try to do with your customers or your patrons? You try to kind of push the envelope and do...
Certainly, but you have to develop trust, because
mm-hmm.
you're not just going to take somebody who comes in and asks for their usual item, and you say no to them once, you say no to them a second time, you say no to them a third time, they're turned off. They're not interested in trusting you at that point. So you just have to have, like, that answer
okay.
that can ease them into it, ease them into your menu, make them more adventurous.
So it's like training wheels. So there's some very adventurous drinks
mm-hmm.
that you make,
mm-hmm.
and there are probably some more kind of entry level familiar drinks with a twist. Is that right? So do you know what the most often ordered cocktail from kind of the standard list is?
Margarita is definitely the most popular. We're out of the Sex and the City phase, which was the Cosmo.
Okay.
And the margarita is, like, countrywide the most popular cocktail. And it can be made really, really well, and I'll still drink a good margarita, and it can be made really poorly, which is usually using sweet and sour mix as opposed to fresh lime.
Right. So, folks, I met you, Gabby, through Amar Santana, our mutual friend.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know, Amar is on this season of Bravo Top Chef, and I think he's doing pretty well. I'm behind one or two episodes. Don't tell Amar. But you manage the cocktail program for him and his two restaurants, right? That's what you do?
Technically, I'm his consultant. So
you're his consultant.
Michael Rooney, he's the active bar manager who's
mm-hmm.
there every day. But we put together the menu together. So I selected the glassware, created the menus, trained the staff, designed the bar. That whole number, and then I'm on retainer with them to constantly train the staff and update the menus.
Got it. So you're basically the cocktail whisperer. Then you come in and got it, and phenomenal stuff, right? You're considered really to be one of the top people doing this kind of thing. I can say that. She doesn't want to brag too much here, but you are. So now, all right, what happened? How did we get here? Like, how did this evolve? Like, why? Because we went 15 years ago, it was basic well drinks,
mm-hmm.
you know, maraschino cherry out of a giant jar, you know, a whiskey sour, the way you describe it. Very, very basic. You know, we had a very basic palate.
Mm-hmm.
So what set it off? Was it something in pop culture? Was it a TV show? What happened?
Well, I don't think it's fair to quite jump that far ahead. I'm going to give you a really quick rundown of the history.
Okay.
Which is, cocktails were created, it's an American invention.
Mm-hmm.
Late 1800s, That's when this giant cocktail revolution comes out. Their bartenders are considered to be social elite. They hobnob with politicians and lawyers and doctors. They come into their bars after work and they drink well. And through history, we see from the mid-1800s, cocktails becoming more and more fancy, if you will, with different liqueurs and vermouths and stuff being imported from Europe. Mm-hmm. And then Prohibition happens in the early 1900s.
Which was a major downer.
It detrimented the spirits industry and the cocktail industry. So bartenders had a choice. They could either go underground and work in speakeasies, which was improbable.
So they became like drug dealers, mm-hmm. kind of.
Or they moved to Europe, or they quit.
Mm-hmm. Was there an exodus to Europe?
There was a large exodus. Mm-hmm. There are books that came out. The books that came out during Prohibition, if anybody says Prohibition-style cocktails, that's a fallacy. It's pre-Prohibition-style cocktails are what we're talking about. It's before Prohibition. Mm-hmm. During Prohibition, there were cocktails that came out in books, but those mostly came from Europe, and a lot of them came from American bartenders working at European bars.
Okay.
Like the Savoy.
So then when Prohibition ends, what happens? These people are gone, right? This long thread of...
Sure. There's a very limited amount of alcohol that's imported immediately after. Mm-hmm. And especially when it came to the liqueurs and the vermouths, they didn't come back into the U.S. for years. Some of them, not even until the early 2000s. And we get back into drinking spirits in still a relatively elegant way in that early part of after Prohibition. And it's not until about the 50s and 60s you can kind of parallel it to fast food. Everything starts becoming more convenient in America. We're eating burgers at a fast food restaurant, so all of a sudden.
The microwave age.
Exactly. TV dinners. And so we have old vintage stuff at the shop that's like grasshopper mix. It's a powder inside of a paper bag. Whiskey sour mix. It's a powder inside of a paper bag.
Does it have a grasshopper in it?
It has. A grasshopper is a classic cocktail with like mint and cream, and it's kind of like almost like a milkshake.
I don't have a microwave at home, by the way, but
I don't
still.
Either.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, so, I can't cook it on the stovetop.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, but when you say you have that grasshopper mix, is that something where you prepare that for people to buy to use it, at home?
Yeah, because it was convenience again. So into quicker, and that's from then, and it's something we laugh at, but we hold on to now because you can kind of start to see the decline. So you think of the Mad Men era where they're having 5 martini lunches.
Right.
They're still drinking well, and then it starts to decline after about the Mad Men era.
All right, Gabby, we're going to finish this. I'm going to hold you over, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this because very interesting, and we're going to have you actually design a cocktail for us.
Okay.
Okay? On air.
No
Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. When you're on. Any drug that would make me eat a Taco Bell, I don't want any part of. Like, I don't want any part of that. And welcome back to the show, Sam Berjofsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC. And if you're just tuning in, we're talking to Gabby Dion. And, well, you know how in L.A. everybody always asks you, what do you do?
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like the most annoying question.
Yeah.
No, there's a lot more to me than what I do.
Absolutely.
So, what do you do?
Well, I own a liquor store that specializes in craft cocktail gear, but I also consult on projects. I've been bartending for years. I never want to be called a mixologist. I feel like that word almost injects pretentiousism. Wow.
Say that loud. Pretentiousness
into it.
We haven't been drinking, folks. Not yet.
Not yet, but maybe we should.
Uh-huh. Yes.
But definitely I'm the brainchild behind most of the cocktails that come out of Broadway and Vaca, both in Laguna Beach and Costa
and
Mesa.
And those are restaurants that are Amar Santana's restaurants. He's on this episode, this season of Top Chef, Bravo Top Chef. But I know you also from your shop. You've mm-hmm. got, and it's... Is it? How do we find out more about it? The Mixing Glass?
TheMixingGlassShop.com.
Okay.
Or you can follow us on Instagram or Twitter at The Mixing Glass. And
awesome.
We sell liquor, we sell tools, but we really wanted to elevate the game of the consumer in Orange County. And they're able to come in, learn about how to make cocktails, buy all the tools that they could need to make it at home. And we pass off recipes and everything.
Awesome. But fundamentally, you are somebody who creates cocktails.
Sure. Bartender at heart and a consultant on my paycheck.
Got it. Love it. So now we were talking about the convenience of how, you know, everything went to microwave.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of quickly, how did we go from these cocktails just being simple and, you know, straightforward and
sure.
you know, mixes and just, you know, pedestrian? How did we go from that to where we are now?
Let's fast forward right through the 80s and Tom Cruise's cocktail movie and all of that, where everything's really convenient out of a gun. And
right.
let's get to a food movement, which starts in the 90s, let's say, where people are starting to care more, late 90s, about their food and where it comes from, early 2000s. And with that becomes an awareness of the consumer that's driving this thing. They want to know where their food's coming from. They want to know how it's made. They want to know what's being put into it. And wine game is being elevated. Beer game is being elevated. And
for sure, because now you've got these $200 bottles of beer, which blew my mind.
Blows my mind still.
Yeah, okay, good.
But people, they're going to care about what they're putting into their bodies. And you start caring about your cocktails. People shy away from cocktails for the last decade before the 2000s because they're drinking drinks that are too sweet.
Uh-huh.
And so, number one, people start just drinking a lot of vodka. Vodka tonics, vodka sodas, vodka heavily shaken. I won't even call it a martini.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear customers coming in and they just say, not too sweet. They'll try a cocktail, but not too sweet. And that is an overcorrection for all of the crap that we've been drinking for decades. And so now people are curious. They want to see what's out there. And there are a bevy of distillers all around the country that are coming up with new distilleries and craft spirits. And
well,
we're riding that wave.
And to that point, you know, the reason I'm doing this segment, folks, is I was blown away. I was up in Utah, Park City, a couple weeks back, and here's what you're familiar with the High West,
absolutely,
and that's you like their stuff,
yeah.
Okay, I don't have them represented here on the shelf of booze that we have in the studio. But I went and I saw their new distillery that they've built. So the guy behind it had opened up a small distillery on just off of Main Street in Park City. And of course, Utah is, you know, it's hard to even find a drink there, right? So now they've got this producer that is starting to get great recognition. And I went on a little tour of the distillery, the new distillery that they opened up in Wanship, and I'm blown away. Everything is, even though they're starting to be more mass producing their stuff, there's still people in there tasting it and figuring it out and tweaking it, and they've got a lab and it. I mean, it's big stuff, and
so
a far cry from this kind of an industrial scale production. That even though, like you were saying, Jack Daniel's is still a good whiskey, it's nothing like that. So what do I have here? I've got Michter's.
Michter's, yep, which is,
and what is
sourced whiskey mostly.
Okay. What does that mean, sourced whiskey? Like, is it coming from other producers?
They are a historic distillery that was around and then dissolved, and then someone purchased the property rights. And then you can't just open a distillery and have whiskey.
Because it takes time to age it.
Exactly.
Right.
Whiskey is an investment. So you buy a distillery, you start working out your recipes, and you're laying down spirits for years in barrel. And then, 5 years maybe you can start bottling stuff? So in all of that time, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You need to probably purchase whiskey from a large manufacturer who makes quality stuff. MGP is out of Indiana, and they produce amazing whiskeys that people have been buying forever. And actually, I believe it was the Whiskey Advocate gave them Distiller of the Year this last year. Because
even though they don't retail their own stuff.
Nope.
They just sell to other
lots and lots of brands that we all drink on a regular basis. High West.
And the idea is that they sell it in bulk, and then these folks turn around and blend it and then sell it for $100 a bottle.
Oh, well.
Or more.
Yeah, a lot of the times. Depending on how old it is.
So what about Whistle Pig? That's got a following, right? That
Whistle
other one?
Pig does have a huge following there. So if you were to make a scale of like oldest distillers in the country that are currently operating to more new, they're more on the new side of things.
Right.
They're also purchasing whiskey from Alberta Distillery in Canada.
Right.
Which is running out. Alberta,
right.
Everybody's running out of whiskey. Even MGP doesn't really have old whiskeys that you can purchase anymore.
Right.
Because of the boom, the desire of the consumer. And they're all Canadian whiskey. It's rye-based, mostly. And that particular one I'm not familiar with. That's the Old World. But their 10-year rye was the most popular, for years.
So what about that Russell's right there? I got that in your shop.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
That's more right up my alley. Now, this whole small...
Well, it should be. I got it in your shop.
Yeah. So small batch is a buzzword. It's not. It doesn't really mean anything. It's not linked to any, like, classifications or legal property. They're made out of Kentucky. It's by Jimmy and Eddie Russell. Jimmy Russell's been producing whiskey for 60 years. His son's been producing whiskey for 30 years. And they make amazing stuff. Wild Turkey is their big brand, and a lot of people will shun away from it, but it is benchmark Canadian whiskey. And this is their specialty product that's been laid down for 17 years.
Okay. So where, I mean, are you, is it like an artist making, you know, painting a beautiful painting? When you sit down and make a cocktail, mm-hmm. how do you do it?
I start with, like, a basic mathematic formula.
Math?
Mm-hmm, a little bit.
Stop it.
Nah, it's pretty easy.
So how do you do math when you've been drinking?
We take, like, a base recipe. It's actually become second nature because we do it so often. But a base, like, sour recipe, like, yeah. we call a cocktail family the sour, which comes from everything. Margaritas come from the sour family. Lemon drops, anything you can imagine, comes from that sour family. And the basic spec is 2 ounces of spirit, 3/4 ounce of citrus, 3/4 ounce of sweetener. And then you just plug and play. Change out the spirit. You could do any spirit. Tequila, gin, whiskey, rum. Change out the sweetener. You could do honey. You could do regular white sugar. You could do turbinado sugar. You can flavor your simple syrup to lavender simple syrup. Hmm. Whatever you want. Sky's the limit. And then you got your sour. Lemon or lime, mostly. And then you plug and play.
But I get it. So then, but do you do it just based on taste? Is it just...
Mood, whatever I'm inspired by. So, let's
say... And do you ever make a cocktail... Well, do you ever make a cocktail that... Do you just fall in love with it and then people hate it?
Sometimes. But usually they're really, really vegetal or, like, savory and bordering on the line of, like, too much. And I really like that. But most people... That's
Got
a bit
it.
Of a jump.
Okay. So, now... Since this is kind of a political show, and we mm-hmm. don't often, you know, really talk about this kind of stuff, but it's good. So, you following the race a little bit?
A little bit.
I know you're a strong Donald Trump supporter, right?
Never.
I love it. So, so can I ask? I mean, who's your horse? Who do you have? Who's your baby?
I'm feeling the burn.
No! No! Robbie, producer Robbie, bring me a whiskey. I need a drink. Okay, so if you were to design a cocktail to...
I wouldn't have enough marijuana to design a cocktail for Bernie Sanders.
You know, we'd call it the Bernie. So what would it have? What would it have? I know it'd be free. Obviously, you'd give it away.
Give it away for sure.
Oh, my God, you're a small business owner. How can you be for Bernie Sanders?
I think the dumbing down of America has fully happened.
Yeah.
If it means paying for education for everybody to raise the intellectual property of this nation.
Well, we won't debate that. I love you too much. So, all right. So now what would you put in the Bernie? Come on. What would the Bernie have? Would it be a sour? I think it should be a sour, no?
I think it should be a sour, but it would have to have some really old spirit in there.
Yeah, like something like chartreuse.
Yeah, 600-year-old recipe from Carthusian monks.
Yeah, kind of monkish.
Yeah,
you're right.
Kind of monkish.
Something Dick
little...
Van Dyke would drink, you know, as he's mumbling about how great Bernie is. Okay, so, all right. So, what about the Donald Trump? What do we have for the Donald?
Definitely need some gold flake.
Gold flake?
Yeah, because I'm sure his
thing?
House is super gaudy and has gold everywhere.
No, it does.
I'm
now,
sure.
No. Is that a thing? Do people put gold?
Oh, you
flake
can totally
in...
put gold flakes into cocktails.
Okay.
Edible gold. They put it on chocolate. You can put it into cocktails, too.
Okay.
So or we could use a Goldschlager.
Oh, which is?
A really bad liqueur from the 80s.
Okay. All right. Can you get a little floating toupee at the top, right?
Definitely.
Okay. Now, what
cotton
about...
Cotton candy. We could use cotton candy.
What about the Clinton? What does that have? And I'll let you go with either Hillary or Bill. Either one is acceptable.
Boy. How about some Arkansas apple brandy?
Okay. And a roofie. Producer Robbie's contributed to this. All right. So cool. So one more time, if people want to find you, they go to the Mixing Glass. What is it? TheMixingGlassShop.com.
Yep. Or you can visit us at our shop in Costa Mesa.
And if they visit you at your shop, you have classes there where you teach how to make cocktails. And if they're lucky enough, they're going to see Sweet James hanging out.
They most likely will see him. He's always in the back row.
Yeah. Is he a troublemaker?
Here and there. Sometimes. He always apologizes.
Well, folks, it's great to be here with you. We'll be back next week with more. So I love this thing. I love this. Gabby, thanks for coming in. Sam Rojovsky. You bet. Sam Rojovsky, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Hi, I'm James Bergener. Look, accidents happen. If you're in pain, you need to be proactive. Calling a lawyer isn't about going after the person who hit you. It's about dealing with an insurance company. The adjuster making decisions on your case isn't worried about treating you fairly. They're worried about one thing, money. An insurance company will never take care of you, but I will. Call me, Sweet James, at 1-800-881-2021. Or go to sweetjames.com.